Welcome to my podcast, where I meet people that I find extra interesting who share their life story. This is Rise and Shine with Shireen, a Swedish podcast where I get to dive into people's lives and also hear their view on health, and that's when it gets really interesting. Meet my lovely guests from all over the world, enjoy the moment, and thank you so much for listening. This podcast is sponsored by Beauty Disrupted, a Swedish-French beauty company where every bar is gently crafted in the south of France with 100% organic oils and fragrances. And my body just loves these products. Signe Gottwald, you just crossed Africa on a cake electric motorbike as the first person ever. You rode from Barcelona to Cape Town in South Africa, a distance of 13,000 kilometers in 124 days without any assistance. You are a well-experienced motorcycle driver and have also driven around the world before on a regular motorbike. You have said in another interview, the motorcycle is a door opener and it helps you to get in contact with people in different places. My dream was to see the world with my own eyes. No matter how much I learn about places, seeing and experiencing them myself will always give me a better understanding. I want to hear all about your road experiences and when you were first inspired of your father at a young age. I want to hear about this journey to Cape Town and all the things that happened during these 124 days, how you prepared physically and mentally, your morning routines, and your next goal, and about courage, and of course, much, much more. Very welcome to my podcast, Rise and Shine with Shireen.
Thank you very much.
And here we are. I'm so happy to have you here, Signe. Very, very welcome. And as I understand, you are in Barcelona right now, which is your hometown. Even though you're German, you live in Barcelona.
Exactly.
So how are you today, the last day of March when we are recording this? And I already told the listeners that you're in Barcelona. So how are you today?
I'm great. I mean, here the sun is shining.
It's good for you.
It's around 18 degrees. I'm happy. You know, the day is good, and I have vacation next week, so everything is good. I'm looking forward to.
You're going on vacation next week?
Yes.
Where are you going?
Oh, to Patagonia.
Oh my God. Yes. Work/vacation or just pure vacation?
Vacation. I was invited, so it's a little bit of work, but for me, it's more vacation and relaxing, so I don't really have to do anything.
Mm. And for the listeners that doesn't know where Patagonia is, can you explain it?
Yeah, it's in the south of South America, divided by Argentina and Chile.
Mm. Amazing. Lots of mountains.
Exactly.
Lots of nature. Wow, that's not like the regular, like the Swedes go to Mallorca or the Canary Islands or Thailand. You go to Patagonia. That says a lot about you, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Amazing. So let's talk about just a little bit before we come to this amazing journey that you just not long ago finished, just about a month ago.
Right. Yeah.
So the young Signe, you were inspired by your father, if I did my research right. Tell us a little bit, just really short about that thing, how you were inspired by the motorcycles.
So my dad, when I grew up, my dad worked a lot, but in his free time, he would take his motorcycle and, you know, go on short trips, even if it's, you know, to the bakery. And sometimes he would take my sister and my brother, you know, two of us on the bike with him, and sometimes just me. And it was always fun. And, you know, we always had small fights about who was allowed to go with him. And that was when we were really, really small. And then we got a little bit older, and my dad told us about when he was younger in the 70s, that he rode, you know, different areas in the world. And I always thought it was super interesting and so inspiring, because he went, for example, from Germany all the way to Ivory Coast on a street legal motorcycle, but like a street motorcycle through the desert. And at that point, there weren't that many, you know, tarmac roads as there now. And then another time, he also rode from New York to Ecuador, also on a motorcycle.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
It's not really like around the corner or just a day trip.
Yeah, and he would do this in his free time, like while he was studying. And Everything he told us about this always was super interesting to me. It was less interesting to my siblings, but I always thought it was super interesting.
Good for you. You could have all the quality time.
Yes, yes. And it basically was a basis for our relationship as well, because we had a very similar idea of traveling, and we were both curious always about the world and seeing different countries and cultures and meeting people. And so we somehow became a great travel team. And so I think when I got my license, when I was around 24, from that point on, for the next 10 years, we went on motorcycle trips together every year.
Aww.
We both biked somewhere. Yeah, we flew
somewhere.
It's
only the two of you.
Just the two of us, yeah. And that's how we like bond with traveling and the motorcycles and everything. So yeah, so that's where it all came from. And so the first trip after I got my license was also with my dad, who said, hey, we're going to go to Morocco. We're not going to plan anything. So we went down to Switzerland, took the ferry to Morocco from there, and then just rode around Morocco. And then after 2 weeks, we had to return. And I didn't want to. And, you know, every time we went on a trip somewhere in the world, I felt like, oh, I wish I could just continue and see, you know, what's around the next corner, what's happened, what's going to happen if I cross the border, and what's, you know, how is the world going to change if I just continue and watch how it really changes while traveling over land. Because of course, if you fly somewhere, you don't really see how you know, places and people and everything develops. And that was the idea that, you know, to travel around the world came from those smaller first trips that I took with my dad.
So the thing that pushed you to go even further was actually seeing the countryside, or was it just experiencing different cultures? Because as you say, when you take a flight, like I take a flight from Stockholm to whatever, to Portugal, I miss everything in between.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I was always very curious, as you said in the intro, I always wanted to see the world. So every country that I've never been to is interesting to me to see, all the countries I've been to as well, but more the places that I don't know anything about or that I don't have any experience or haven't seen yet. And so the world is, at least at this point, I thought really big. And I looked at the map and there were so many places that I hadn't seen at this point. And my mom is Korean, my dad is German. And so the very first idea was to ride from Germany to Korea overland.
That's quite a distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Not for you though, but for me or for other normal people.
I mean, at that point, it was also quite a big distance for me. But once I really started to think of this trip, I decided to actually just travel the world instead of just making, you know, one specific plan to ride from A to B. I left it basically open when I left and didn't have a specific plan when I would come back or which countries I would travel through. That was very, very spontaneous, and many decisions were made while I was already on the road.
Wow. So this was on a regular motorcycle. And this was what, sometime 5, 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah, that was I left in June 2017 and then came back in March 2020.
This is so amazing. So I read somewhere in another interview that you started out in Germany, which is it Stuttgart or Frankfurt or is it
Stuttgart?
Stuttgart, yeah. And something happened in, like, you had a little thing with your motorcycle in, was it Turkey?
Yeah, I mean, I have lots of little and bigger
of course,
things in many
countries,
yeah. So one of the first bigger issues was in Turkey. I was very quick in the beginning because coming from a job where everything is very well structured and you try to use all your time all the time, I left Germany and I was kind of on a schedule as well. So I had my alarm clock set in the morning. I knew exactly how many kilometers I would ride per day. And it was very well planned, like the daily stretch. And so I was very quick, and I think I arrived in Turkey already after 2 weeks. I checked into a hotel, stayed there overnight in Istanbul. The next morning I checked out. The hotel manager was super curious about my motorcycle, about the trip, and said, oh, I wish I could ride motorcycles too, but my wife doesn't allow me. But seeing you, this
strict
kind of
wife,
it inspires me again to maybe go for this dream that I've been having for a while. So we had a little chat and he said, this is my card. In case you run into any issues, just reach out. I left that day, and then after maybe 100 kilometers, I had an issue. The bike just wouldn't start. And that was outside of Istanbul, and there was no one who spoke English, and it was really hard to get any help organized. And so I called this person, and I said, hey, I'm actually already in need of your help. Can you please help me organize someone to transport a motorcycle back to the city?
And I'm sure he was really happy to help, huh?
He was. Yeah. It was so nice. He immediately organized everything. He sent someone with a truck to pick me up. We drove back to the city. This ride was very funny because the rider didn't speak any English either. But we were singing, you know, trying to communicate. And then I arrived back in Istanbul. He took care of my accommodation and told me exactly where to go. It was perfect. And then, of course, the next people who took care of the motorcycle were the nicest people that took care of me for 3 days while the motorcycle was getting there. Yeah, they invited me to food and like events and stuff. And then after those 3 days, I wanted to pay, of course, for everything. And they didn't accept anything. They just said, no, this is, you know, we want to support your trip. We're so happy that you're doing this. And they wished me best of luck. And
they sent me off.
Super, super nice people. And one of the beautiful things that happened afterwards is that this hotel manager reached out to me weeks later and said, I got my license now. I got my motorcycle. And my wife is even coming with me. So
really?
It was beautiful. And they're traveling together like a lot. And it's nice because basically just because we met, it reignited his dream.
Exactly.
And he
put some extra spice into his marriage as well. And he took his wife on an adventure. That's so amazing. And I'm thinking that you must have had so many encounters like this. And I'm thinking maybe that's your inspiration or what drives you to continue doing this, because you have met, I'm thinking you must have met so many interesting people and also a lot of people wanting to help you.
Yes. I think both on my first trip when I was going around the world, this would not have been possible without all the help that I received. Yeah. I mean, it's a big mixture of course, you have to be very resilient and you have to have a goal as a person, but then you will not be able to achieve anything if you're not open to getting help, if you're not strong in communicating. And that's just, you know, you're lucky with the people that will always try to help you without really asking for anything. That's really, really interesting, because when I was leaving in the beginning in Germany, I was so skeptical when people approached me and gave me water because it was hot. You know, they just gave me a bottle of water. And I, being like a person that grew up in Germany, you're immediately skeptical. Like, what do they want? Do they want to pay? Do they want to sell me something?
Are they going
to
rob me?
Yes, like all of these thoughts that in the beginning you're like struggling with yourself, because like you realize that in the end, no, they just want to be nice and they just give you this water and that's it. They just see you sweating and that it's hot and you're wearing the suit and they just see that you're struggling and they hand you a water and that's basically it. That's where the story ends. And that, of course, leads to your brain at one point relaxing and then being more open, less skeptical, accepting help, because many people, like, they decline help just because you're not sure if there's any other like interest behind this. And after a few weeks, I also decided to say yes more to situations than say no consciously, because I knew that if I say no too often, that will not lead to any of those experiences that I was actually looking for. So.
I'm thinking you must be, and you have been throughout your journeys, you must have been such an amazing inspiration to both women and men and all ages. So I'm really, before we get into this interview, I'm thinking, like, I really want to hear more from you, and we need more people like you. Like, please write a book. Please do lectures, because this is so inspiring. And also that you're saying with how people approach you, because now when we open the news today, it's so much horror. It's like rapes and murders and disasters and war and everything. But this is what we need, what we read, but this is also what media wants us to read. And if we take all of that away, there are so many amazing people that really truly want to help and connect and inspire one another and all the people that you met. So please, Sinje, continue your mission.
Thank you. Yeah, I will.
Also, you were talking about job, and like this sounds like to me and to the listeners, like, wow, you're riding around the world, and how can you afford all this? I'm guessing there was a lot of sponsors, but then you also, like, not long ago, you had a normal job, and you still have that. You started working for Cake, which is a Swedish company that designs electric motorbikes. But then something happened. You had a dream in 2021. You met the founder of Cake, and exactly. You presented your dream, and now we're here.
Yes, exactly.
So what happened?
I presented my dream, which was to be the first person to cross Africa on an electric motorcycle. And working at Cake, it was just the perfect match. So the first time I met Stefan, the founder and CEO of the company, I just took my chance and presented my idea to him. And I was not sure how he would react, because, of course, the chances that someone would say yes to this kind of adventure as an employer are very low. So I didn't have high expectations. But it's Stefan, and Stefan is a visionary. So he was open to this crazy idea. And so he said that Cake will support me on this. And I contacted, you know, different people from the company, the engineers, and a bit of the service team to understand, you know, what do I have to prepare in terms of bikes, spare parts, and everything. I got help to do this preparation. And then in October 2022, I had more or less prepared for this trip. And left from Barcelona on the ferry to Tangier, Morocco. And from then on, I just rode all the way to Cape Town.
I get goosebumps. That's amazing. Also, you didn't ride from Barcelona down to the south of Spain? You took the ferry?
No, I took the ferry, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, wow. That is wow. So, and again, like I said in the introduction, you did it unassisted, which is amazing. You are you're such a cool woman, Sinje. And were you ever scared? I mean, you are a woman going on your own through Africa. I mean, there are some really rough areas there.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely scared. I was in many situations when I felt really scared, and generally being on the road alone, you always are kind of in a situation you always kind of tense, like you always have to have your guards up, you have to be super conscious about your surroundings and everything. But I have to say that, and I want to say this now before anyone comes to any conclusions, I was riding alone as well on my trip around the world, and I learned the things that I have to do, in order to stay more or less safe. And even though most people are super helpful and only want the best for you, of course, it would be naive to say that it's not a risk to do something like this solo as a woman. And so I think it's always like a balancing thing to say, yes, you have to be careful. And there are situations where you can, you know, experience really negative things. But that's, you know, not everywhere, and not all people are like this. And one last thing is, as a woman alone, you get even more support.
Yeah.
Because most people actually see you and want to help, because like, oh wow, this woman is alone, I really want to help. And that's for women and men alike. So the response was often, wow, can I help you? Can I even like invite you for a lunch, just to support me in this mission. But yes, I have one difference between the trip around the world and Africa. I was a lot more cautious because I had less experience in Africa.
Yeah.
So I had only been to Kenya and Morocco before, in Namibia, but I didn't have an idea of Africa and all the countries. So of course I was a bit more cautious, and that was good, because in the end, yes, there are situations where things could have gone wrong, and some small things did go wrong, but But in general, I think if you're very cautious and stick by your own rules, like not riding by night, knowing where you will sleep before you actually arrive there, these kind of things, they don't always work out, of course. There's situations where you can't plan. But then you're kind of okay. And of course, a lot of gut feeling. There are situations where you know you better leave. You shouldn't stay here. And then you just, you know, pack your stuff and leave.
Where did you sleep? I mean, did you sleep? No, but did you sleep? You didn't have a tent. It wasn't that way. You slept in different, maybe you were invited to families and maybe like bed and breakfast and all kinds of different.
So the reason why I didn't bring a tent is because I had to charge the batteries every night. So camping didn't make any sense.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yes, I did camp on my first trip though, because I really liked that. But the situation for this stretch, because I went along the West African coast, so there are lots of parts where there are no hotels, hostels, bed and breakfasts, or places where there's just no electricity. So the planning was always a bit difficult because I had to, you know, every evening I would plan the next day. I would look at the map and see, okay, where is the next possibility to charge? Where is the next possibility to charge after that? And where do I find a place to stay? So it all had to kind of match in the end. And the idea was always to go the maximum kilometers for that day. And then sometimes, you know, you knew that maybe there is a place to charge in 100 kilometers and then there is a place to stay in 150 kilometers. So, you know, you just stay there because you wouldn't go further than 200 kilometers per day anyway. So it really depended on what was there. And I didn't really have a choice. So mostly there were only one, two hotels or hostels or anything like this.
Yeah.
So I just went with what they offered and didn't have any choosing there actually.
And was the trip what you expected it to be?
No, I can say that very clearly.
Nothing.
No.
No. That answer came very fast. No.
Yes.
Okay. No. What were your expectations and what really happened?
So
like in general.
Yes. I mean, I thought that because I had done this other trip before that I would kind of know what to expect, which was true to some certain extent, of course. But then again, as I said earlier, I didn't have any experience in Africa, and I didn't have any experience in long distance riding with an electric motorcycle. So there's two really big components that I had no idea of. And of course, I did some reading and I did my preparation and everything. But I also stayed naive on purpose in many areas, because I think if I had really dig deeper in all of the different aspects, you know, things that I can have that can happen, things that I can control, if I had done this, then probably I would have gotten to a point where I would have said maybe it's too risky, maybe it's you know, but there's a
sometimes
certain...
it's good to not do too much research.
Exactly. So just not focusing on all areas. But I thought before I left, you know, I would just start driving and then I would just stop somewhere and knock on people's doors and be like, hey, I'm riding around with this motorcycle, can I use your electricity? I will of course pay for it. That's kind of what I thought. And I thought that the challenge would be to have people who are willing to let me in and willing to share their electricity with me. It wasn't like this. I think only once I actually charged at a private person's house. Most of the time I went to places where they had electricity, because I mean there's many areas where there's actually no electricity outside the city. So in many places I would have to search for one place in the village that would have electricity for the whole village, where people would go and charge their phones.
Okay.
So it was more like finding out if villages have electricity, if they have, where do they have it? And then also, of course, is it available or not? Because there are blackouts and everything. Sometimes they just don't have electricity. Like a very big surprise for me was when I had crossed already all of the continent. I arrived in South Africa. That's when people told me we have load shedding. That means, you know, there is hours in the day where there is just no electricity for whole cities.
Oh yeah.
And that's just a normal thing there, which I had, you know, I had no idea about. So every country had their specific challenges in terms of electricity. Some countries had only electricity in the capital and then outside very, very scarcely, or they had electricity but it was very unstable and you had to like calculate that there is blackouts all the time. So in the end, mostly I stayed and charged in the hotel at night, and during the day somewhere where there was electricity, a gas station, maybe a restaurant, or like this the center of a village when there was nothing else. And sometimes, sometimes even when there was nothing, like for example in Congo, there was a stretch of absolutely like going through jungle and hundreds of kilometers where there is no bigger village, where I had to charge with a generator, like the generator of the village.
Okay.
Because there was nothing else.
Because this has never been done. No one has ever been on an electric motorcycle this far. And when you were driving, like I would say, or riding in the middle of nowhere, because there were many places that you were, which were middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Maybe just sand everywhere. And can you recall your thoughts? Like, were you scared? Were you amazed? Or were you just in some kind of meditation mode? Or, I mean, what's going on in the brain?
It's different phases. So in the beginning, I was super excited. I was so happy to see landscape, people, talk to people. But then, of course, the further south I got, the more difficult it got with border crossings, with unknown areas, with less electricity, me getting more and more exhausted because of not taking any breaks. And, you know, being on the bike is very, very stressful and exhausting. And so it's a mix of, yes, one day you're super exhausted and you just try to stay on the motorcycle and just function as a body that is moving and you're just trying to get
like a robot. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then sometimes you're amazed by the nature and you look around, you're like, wow, I'm so lucky to be able to see this. I'm so lucky to meet those people. And you're just happy to be there. And you have small encounters that will make you happy for the rest of the day. Because you see something that you would never be able to see if you didn't do a trip like this.
Yeah.
So lots of those kind of situations. But towards the end, like I would say actually from the middle of the trip onwards, it was a struggle more or less for me physically and mentally because I was super drained. And so many things happened and you had to, I think the biggest challenge was probably the mental fitness that I had to bring into this whole story, because otherwise it would have, like, there were so many things that were challenging to keep, like, just to keep going, not to give up and not to say, oh my God, this is too much, too scary, too stressful. I'm too exhausted. And that was the hardest part, to just say, okay, this is going to work. You can continue and, you will make it and you cannot panic, because some situations you're like very close to panicking. And if you have them often within, you know, those 4 months, things happened almost every second day, something really challenging happened. So at one point you're really, really exhausted.
Oh, I have like, I every sentence that you say, I'm like, oh, I have another 10 questions. Oh, I have another 10 questions. Like, did you ever find yourself like you really felt, I'm calling my mom and dad and my siblings and just like, I'm giving up? Or, you know, just felt like I'm not doing this anymore.
I had many moments where I was thinking, wow, Sinia, why are you doing this? Like, why did you put yourself into this situation yourself? Because no one asked me to do it, you know. It was my own idea, my own motivation to do it. So of course I questioned myself at some points. I had moments where I cried, where I like had like breakdowns and didn't feel like I had the power and energy to continue. But I never had the point where I said, I'm giving up. That's not something that happened.
Okay.
But of course I called home and I called my partner to say, hey, this happened. And then I got, you know, the support the good words that in those situations.
And what is your why? What's your why?
It's like, really difficult. I haven't gotten to a point where I can answer this in a very clear way for myself even. The main reason is, I think, that I'm curious. Like, I know that from when I was a kid already, to me, it was always the best to know that I would be going to a place, like, for example, because my mom is Korean, so that my parents sent my sister and me, for example, to Korea alone for the first time when I was 12, my sister was 11, alone, not really, because I had a family in Korea and they picked us up at the airport and everything. But
But still, it's a long flight when you're 12.
It's a long flight, and it's the family that picked us up. It's not like it was close family. I mean, it was my aunt, but I didn't really have a relationship to her at that point. So it was difficult in the beginning, but I was still excited to be in a place that I didn't know about. And so every time when I did something in my life that included something abroad or like having a project somewhere, that was always exciting to me, because I always learned something. I always had a really good feeling meeting people and them giving me their point of view, because other people have different, you know, ideas of life. And the more people you meet, the more broader your idea of what you can do in life gets, of course. And so I think for me, the original idea, or the first idea, is yes, seeing the world is definitely one of the whys. But then again, the questions that I ask myself at this point, and I'm trying to really find an answer to, and I'm actually like really tackling those topics, is like, why am I a person that has so much energy and strength and this willingness to continue, even though most other people would have said, oh no, thank you, that is way too stressful, it's way too dangerous, and especially why would you do it alone? All of those questions I'm trying to find an answer to.
You're still wondering. Just give me a call whenever you find the answer. But I'm thinking now that you're doing so many interviews, because this is a huge thing. I know that you've been super busy with media, and you probably get a lot of the same questions that I'm asking you, but maybe sometimes you get other questions, and eventually you will probably find your why.
It's true, because
you have to twist your thoughts every time, even though someone asks you the same questions like 100 times, maybe that answer will be a little bit different each time. So
interesting. It's true, because I get many questions are the same questions, but then once in a while you get questions where like, oh wow, that's actually a good way to think of this whole thing. For example, I was at this interview just 2 weeks ago, and they asked me the same question, why, but tied to the family. So how did my parents raise me, for example? And are my siblings the same? Are they kind of...
And they're not.
And they're not, exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Wow. So how did you prepare for this trip? I'm thinking physically, because it's really hard to sit on the bike every day. Like you need to be well trained in so many ways. So how did you prepare physically and mentally?
Yeah. So physically, I had a personal trainer, and he knew what my goal was. So he knew exactly which areas we had to focus on building up muscles and overall fitness. So that's something I did. And then of course I had my normal fitness, structure that I have in my normal life, additionally. And then mentally, that was a bit difficult, because I knew that I would have to prepare mentally for this, but because everything was so stressful in the weeks before leaving, I didn't really have time for this. So I remember that I think it was actually like 3 or 4 days only before I left, I said to my partner, oh, I actually have to start like getting into the mental, phase of
zen flow,
and I realized that it was way too late, of course. And because it was so stressful, I didn't really have that zen when I left. And I got onto the ferry, and luckily that ferry took 28 hours.
That's when you did your mental preparation. Yeah,
that's when I did that, exactly. So I prepared for all the really uncomfortable situations that I knew that I was going to run into, not feeling well because of not having, you know, the right nutrition for a while, not sleeping in nice places, not being able to like wash yourself regularly in the way that you would normally do, all the heat. So there are many things that was around, like feeling not comfortable in your like body. But then another topic I prepared for mentally was, of course, running into challenges, like something could happen to the bike. So I rehearsed for myself, if the bike has an issue, if something happens, you know, there can be accidents or something I could not prepare for. that I would have to stay calm. I would not allow myself to panic, and that I would know that I would find a solution. And those things I recounted very often, and also while on the trip. And then also because I had situations where it was dangerous or even a bit scary for me, that's when I also told myself that, like, prepared for this mentally as well, to say this is a temporary thing. And I would constantly tell myself, you know, this is temporary and you will be at your, I don't know, hotel in 2 hours. And, you know, sometimes I would have to ride through the night, which is super scary if there's no lights. And then I would know, okay, no panicking, and it's temporary, and you do what you have to do. And that's how I, like, had to handle some situations and challenges, because it's easy to panic in situations.
Yeah,
it's so, so easy to panic, and then that doesn't help.
Never before have I considered shampooing my hair to be a nice ritual until now. I really enjoy massaging these bars on my body as well as my head. Together with the scents from jasmine, bergamot, rosemary, eucalyptus, and orange blossom, my showering moments are now at a whole new level. The products are certified vegan and completely free of plastic and harsh ingredients. And another thing that I really love about Beauty Disrupted is that they donate as much as 20% of their profits to organizations that protect the planet and combat climate change. But most of all, they give me a huge sense of pleasure. You are such an inspiration. And before I said you need to write a book, and now I'm taking it one step further. After you have written your book, please do it very fast. I'm thinking like this would be a great movie. There is a movie. There is a movie with one of my favorite actresses, Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name, but
the
it's
hike?
Based. No, it's The Hike. The hike on the West Coast from Oregon to, and that's based on a true story.
Oh.
Yeah. She did a hike in the mountains. That's based on a true story. Do you remember the name of the movie?
No, but I think it's like the Appalachian Trail or something like it. What's
something
that
like that. Yeah. Yeah. But you know the one
it's
that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
it's a very good movie.
They should do like the Sinya story, like the African journey on an electric motorbike. So now that you have accomplished something that has never been done before, and you've also, I mean, accomplished riding around the world and all these, I mean, this is a huge thing. And do you feel like, okay, I'm just going to go back to my desk and my computer and I'm going to be like a normal person. Or what are your feelings? Do you feel like, okay, the next thing should be to, you know, like buy one of those trips to go to the moon? Or, I mean, where do you go from here?
it's also a very good question, because I don't really know either, because I'm both somehow. I love having my home here. I love this city. I love my life here.
I'm guessing your partner, like,
yes,
you,
exactly.
Even more now. Yeah.
Yeah. The everyday life I have here is just, I love it. But I also know that I'm never going to be the person that is not going to do any sort of adventure. So I know that, you know, that's part of my life. I have accepted this, and my friends and family have accepted this too, because it took a while for some people to accept it. So I think I will do other things in the future, but I haven't planned anything like big. Mm. I have trips planned. Like you said, for me, smaller trips are bigger trips for other people. Will be,
of course. You
know, yeah. So I always have adventures planned, even if it's just 1 or 2 weeks, and even like super like small adventures here in the Barcelona area where I just go in the mountains.
I love Barcelona.
Yeah, I love it here so much. It's really a great place. And but after I returned, which is now I think around 6 weeks since I got back, it took me maybe 3 weeks to relax, like just not be like so tense all the time and start to sleep well again and get healthy and not have this constant worry of things that I need to do in order to continue the next day. And it was just a time that I needed to relax. And then I had all those interviews and people contacted me. So that happened at the same time, kind of. So I didn't really have time to reflect on this trip. So this feeling of, wow, I did something crazy. And
yeah, it comes afterwards.
It took a while. And it's not even now it's really there, because I get it from other people more than I feel it myself.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah, we are so amazed, and you're like, yeah, I'm back now. Came back in one piece.
I think it will take some time, but that's fine, because it was kind of the same for my first trip. When I returned, everyone was so amazed, and my parents were proud of me, and I just felt like, I did something I loved, and it was great, and now I'm back. Yeah. So
another day at the office. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then about the returning back to life, the first time I returned back to my normal life was super hard, because it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
After 3 years, it was really hard to like go back to an office job. But now it's very different. Sorry. The drink.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to take a sip too.
Now it's a little bit different, because, as you said, the interest is so big that I have so many things that I want to do with this trip, and you know, to promote it and just like have people see what was achieved actually. And so I am actually thinking of writing a book. I am preparing presentations, and that's also where I get the motivation and the positive feelings from, because even if it's not just a few people, and the messages I get with information like, hey, you know, I saw your story and now I'm doing this and that. And it doesn't have to do with electric motorcycles or motorcycles in general, just some dreams that people had that they pushed aside and that they took up on again. Or what I love the most is a message I got from this person that said, hey, I have a daughter and I hope that she will grow up and be, you know, so brave and
light. Yeah, because, I mean, I'm thinking also it doesn't have at all to do with the electric motorbike. It has to do with a dream, courage, do what you love to do. It has to do with passion. It has to do with like do whatever brings you joy. And also you're a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking you're such an amazing inspiration to so many people. Whatever work you have, if you're a business leader or if you have your home with three little kids or whatever, it can be super small and it can be huge. So I'm also, just like your parents, I'm also proud of you as a human being.
Thank you. I actually had a call yesterday with someone who contacted me from Kenya. He's working for an electric motorcycle association there. Mm. And he reached out and wanted to hear more about the story and understand more. And he said in the end, I was super touched by this. He said in the end, Sinia, we're so proud of you. We thank you so much for putting Africa on the map and for having done this on an electric motorcycle, because he knows that many people will think differently now about electric mobility. And so that was really nice to hear. And that's like a person I don't know, like he just reached out and said, hey, can we have a conversation? So that's it's basically what I thrive through or from. It's what makes me get all the energy, I guess, in the end.
Mm. And you're also, it's not, we talked about that before we pressed the recording button, like it's not really final yet, but you're talking with the Guinness Book of World Records. But there are some obstacles, and I think they have like really particular rules. And so it's not really finished, but you might end up in that book.
Yes. Distance traveled on an electric motorcycle. So we'll wait for the final decision. But
So what superpowers, skills do you need to do this? I mean, for all these listeners around the world listening now, thinking, maybe that's something for me, or maybe I should climb a really high mountain, or maybe I should quit my job and whatever, sail around the world, or that's also an idea.
Yeah, that would be great.
With your motorcycle or just the boat?
I mean, I would bring a motorcycle.
Yeah, of course you would.
I think on a trip like I just went on, or the trip even before, because there are so many things that are not, it's not going to be always great, you know? So
of course not.
What drove me for my everyday and all the challenges I had was the passion and the goal that I had set for myself. So I think if you have that, you have all the energy that you need, no matter. Because I know, and people reached out to me and said, hey, Sinia, so much happened to you now. Why don't you just come home? I mean, you've suffered enough. And to me, on the first trip as well, if you know what you're going for, what your goal is, then those things are just situations that you overcome. And for other people who don't have the same goal, it's a bigger deal than for yourself, because for you it's just a step to get closer to your goal, and you just try to find a solution around it. And I think that's something that I specifically learned on my first trip.
Yeah.
And applied to my now just finished trip. And that helped me a lot to keep moving and to continue.
And that's beautiful. And I'm thinking, in anything that we do, like it could be work wise, or it can be private, personal, or it can be like, okay, I wanna lose 20 kilos or whatever. So we're always talking about goals, setting up goals, and I like setting up goals, but the goal is like the final destination. And yeah. But it's the whole for the thing that you're really putting this on the map. It's really the trip that is the whole thing. Yes. Well, you arrived. That was wonderful. You're amazing. You have all this media. You're probably going to be in the Guinness Book of Records. But it's the whole trip that is the most exciting thing. That's where everything happens. And with any goal that you set up. So it's always going to be back and forward, happy days, sad days, struggling days, giving up, fuck this, I'm not doing this anymore. And so this is really, 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 it's a really wonderful story that you're sharing, and that we can apply to our everyday life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do that the same way.
I
have so many things that I brought with me that I learned.
Yeah.
And
when you arrived after 124 days in Cape Town, I know there was a lot of media. I think it was like a Swedish delegation welcome you, or what was it like?
It was very funny, because coincidentally, there was an event planned by the Swedish embassy in Cape Town.
Particular day.
Yes. And the name of this event was called Pioneering the Possible.
You're kidding. And this was, it wasn't a coincidence. Well, if you're a little bit spiritual, it's not a coincidence, but okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
But it wasn't planned, and I didn't know of it. And so it was like, I think like a couple of days before I learned of it.
Wow.
And so when they learned of my story, of course said, oh, you have to come to our event. You have to be on stage. You
want
to hear me.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's so amazing though.
It was amazing. And then I arrived, the ambassador was there, the Swedish ambassador. I was on stage, I was interviewed by someone. And there was also like a little panel discussion with two other Swedish people that had a business there. So it was really nice, and it was such a fitting topic. And basically the story of me arriving there on an electric motorcycle, that, to be honest, I mean, every person that I told about this, I would say 9 out of 10 would say, don't do it. It's not going to happen. The chances are too low that you will actually be successful.
Yeah.
So Pioneering the Possible was just the perfect title for this. That was great. But then I was so exhausted at this point that I flew home the same night. Because I was so exhausted. Like my brain was empty. My body was week, and I just wanted to fly home. But it was, of course, the best way to end this trip in Cape Town.
What a welcoming party. But when you when you were almost in Cape Town, which by the way is a beautiful city, what was the thing that you were I'm sure you've been asked this so many times, like what was the thing you were longing for the most?
Sleeping.
Like, was it food or was it a hot shower or just...
No, sleeping.
Sleeping,
because I hadn't really slept well throughout the whole trip. And on top, it was only a few hours per night. And that in combination of like the physical challenges during the trip and mental challenges, of course, I just, I remember a week before I arrived actually in Cape Town, I was in a place somewhere in the desert in Namibia. And I arrived there and I felt so weak that I had to stay 2 days extra to recover from just being so exhausted. My body told me like very, very clearly, you cannot ride for a while. And so I slept and just relaxed for 2 days and tried to drink as much, because it was over 40 degrees as well. I probably had
that too.
So these kind of things. And then I had to like wait for 2 days and recover a little bit and then continue. But it was like every day was a challenge at the end. It was super, super exhausting. So I just wanted to lay down and
sleep,
close my eyes and just relax my brain and just not do anything at all. Because I mean, the whole trip, you're constantly worrying about things that you have to do in order to, like, I had to get all the visas on the trip.
So much formality. Yeah,
exactly.
So we didn't talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Doing like all the things on time, because sometimes you get a visa in one country, but not in another country. Yeah. So you have to be on top of everything all the time. And then of course you're just at the point where, okay, now I can relax. I don't have to think of, do I get to this place or not? Because of course you're on an electric motorcycle with a limited range in the end.
Yeah.
And so your planning really has to be really well done or you get stranded somewhere. So like I had to be focused on everything every day. And then of course it doesn't happen after a while. You're just not in the mental state where you're as focused as in the beginning. So planning got a little bit worse at one point, and that led to some mistakes, and then you feel the results of it immediately on the next day. And so I really have to say I was never that exhausted in my life in those last couple of weeks, and I didn't think that this is a possible thing, to be honest, to feel so exhausted, and even talking was exhausting to me. But that's why I flew home. So
I can imagine. But now that you are back home in Barcelona, you're back with your partner, you have like a quote unquote normal life again, you have a warm shower, you have a comfortable bed. How do you treat yourself now that you have all of these luxury things that we call like everyday thing, but for you now it's a luxury? So how do you treat yourself every day?
I take care of myself a lot more. And I'm it's small things. For example, I was wearing the same clothes for 4 months. The same pants, the same shirt, the same shoes, the same helmet, the same gloves every single day for 4 months. So I was just looking forward to having a choice and, wearing something different.
Putting on a dress with flowers.
Even though the funny thing is, though, when I returned from my trip around the world, that changed me a lot in a way, because I came back and I thought, clothes are just clothes. They don't really tell who you are, really. And on this trip, of course, I mean, no one ever cared about who I looked. And for 3 years, I was just running around. And in the end, I was taking clothes from people, t-shirts with their logos on. And I was like, so that changed a lot. And it wasn't about money. I could have bought myself clothes, but it was just like, it doesn't matter. So I came back and I had 2 years of, I could go back to my, life before this first trip and put on nice clothes. But then again, does it really matter? Then I moved to Barcelona. No one really cares here either. I started working, going to an office, so I had to take care of this a little bit. But I never got to a point where I was before my first trip. Now on this second trip, I came back. I was like, oh my God, I really, really want to do everything that I can do for myself, because I will feel better. And I have actually the possibilities to take care of myself, because I think it was a bit extreme for me, those 4 months. So everything I appreciate a lot more now. And to be honest, I mean, the first 2 weeks, yes, I appreciate the hot shower a lot.
Of course.
That goes away.
That's the obvious thing, but I'm thinking like now.
But it goes away very quickly is what I want to say. You're really appreciative of things and then you get used to them so quickly again. Which is also interesting to see that, I'm aware of everything that I have now and I'm grateful for it, But then it's not like in the first 2 weeks that I'm really grateful with. Now it's just like, okay, it's, you know, it's my normal life.
I like that you say that, because I'm thinking I have never been even close to what you have experienced, but I'm thinking like basic things and how vulnerable we are and how little that we actually need. Like I moved to another country and I put all of my stuff in two bags and I didn't miss anything. I mean, nothing. I missed like maybe like a photo album, but I didn't miss anything like material stuff. And and I could have just brought one bag. And it's funny when you put yourself in this situation, you realize that all you need is love. But you need love and you need food and you need someone to, I mean, you just need to be safe.
Yeah,
and exactly. Whatever that means for you, you need to feel safe. And that's usually love, food, nice people, and people who you can feel safe with. So I think that's also really important, like a mission that you're on to, that we need to tell people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you described something that I went through as well. I went from, like, my career was in tech sales. So, you know, my life was very different to what it is now.
That is so far away from what we're talking about. Yeah.
And during that time, because I was working with customers, but that's, you know, a phase in my life where I had an abundance of clothes because I had to, and also because I wanted to. And then I went on this trip, the first trip, and I realized, oh, wow, I really need only a few things and I feel good. And I returned, and I'm ever since living a very minimalistic life.
Yeah.
I still don't have many things. Like, my apartment is super empty. So when people come, they're like, oh, you could be more personal.
Can we buy you a flower, maybe?
I have flowers. I always have somehow. I love flowers, even if they're just dried. Yeah. But, like, you know, I have limited my things so drastically that
nice.
It's a good feeling for me. But now I'm trying to to find a balance, because I was, you know, there's two extremes. I was extreme in the beginning with too many things. Then I got too extreme with not having anything. And now I'm just trying to find something in between where I feel good and have the things I need, but definitely don't need the whole
extra
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen again.
But I'm thinking, now that we're talking about this, like, for all the women listening right now, which is 85% of my listeners, like, the feeling that you get from just going through your closet, and because I do that a lot, even though I only find two things and I give it to charity, I'm like, oh, there's like a weight coming off my shoulders. This is like a stupid example, but I'm thinking, like, with this living minimalistic, like I did when I was in Spain, it was so relieving. I mean, I didn't miss anything.
It's also funny, because most women, and I mean, I talked about this with my friends, my female friends, and we all agreed that in the end, there is like a few pieces that we always wear.
I know. It's so irritating. It's always on top of of the drawer, and you never go to the bottom of the drawer, and then you say, I have nothing to wear.
Exactly.
And then you go back to wearing this. This is so stupid. This is so good that you say this, because now it's Friday and I'm going to the room, my closet, this evening. I'm going to be thinking about you. I'm going to send you a picture.
All right, cool.
So a question that I ask all my guests, which I think is really, for me, it's really interesting. Like, what are your morning routines? Like, now when you're in Barcelona, when you live your quote unquote normal life, not on the road.
So I want to be transparent, because I haven't gotten to my really normal routine that I had before my African trip. So I'm going to describe my routine that I had before that I will go back to after my next trip. So I am getting up pretty early, because I love the mornings, and twice a week I go to morning yoga outdoors.
Oh, how nice.
So that's one of the reasons why I love Barcelona, with a view over the sea, and you see, while you do yoga with your little group, you see the sun rising. So
come on.
I think it's the best way for me to start the day, by far. it always makes me feel good and I'm happy about this. So that's basically something that I try to do as regular as possible, because I know it's good for me how I feel. With my partner, we then, because he gets up later, we love having a coffee in the morning without having to talk about work or like things that bother you during the day or will bother you. So we consciously take some time to just sit and be. And then quickly it gets into the work business and you just have to do this. Of course, I have now taken up my, you know, my 5-minute skin routine as well, because I know it's not so much about my skin. It's more about those 5 minutes where I take time for myself.
Your self-care time.
Yeah, exactly. So this is something I only picked up recently again, because I've neglected this for a while, but I know that it feels good for me. So I try to, because everyone kind of knows what they feel good about. So that's what I do. I know what I can do for me to feel good for the day. And if I do these kind of things, and of course, I also have like my functional training twice a week in the morning at 7, that I know that this will also make me feel good. One of the reasons I think why sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's easier to like stick to a routine, because of course in a perfect world I would do all of this very regularly, but in reality of course sometimes you do this and this, and that often happens because I'm traveling, you know, and then somehow your whole routine for the week is destroyed. So I know that if I'm 3 days somewhere else, then for me personally it's hard to get back to this routine. So in my head, it's easier if I have the whole week and I can, you know, just stick to it for the whole week and then continue like this. So that's just I guess, probably to some extent a human thing, that it's easier if you have like a midterm, long-term routine that you can stick to. And then, you know, that's just part of your everyday life. So that's why one of the reasons when you said before, like what's going to come next and everything, I really enjoy my everyday life that includes all of those things in Barcelona, because I know that if I have that, even if nothing else really exciting is happening, I know that I will feel good. Like having this routine for a while, I always feel good. I feel good. I look better. I'm, you know, more healthy. I automatically have more energy, and then that's the end result is that I feel better.
Yeah, it's a way to recharge and just land where you are. And sounds amazing. That sunrise yoga. Wow. I love yoga. Yes. I love Barcelona. I love the sunrise. So, and that brings us to another question. So you have your 5 incomplete sentences in front of you that you just fill in the blanks. So the first question or the sentence is actually the most beautiful sunset and sunrise I have seen when traveling on my bike was...
The most beautiful sunset was in Santiago de Chile, in Chile, the capital. Mm. And I think it was the most purple, reddish colored sky I have ever seen in my life. And was as if it was fake. It was amazing. And then in the back, like I was on a rooftop, the sky was red, purple, everything. And then in the very back, I could see the Andes Mountains.
Wow.
So this picture was amazing.
Do you have this on a picture?
Yes, on video.
Send it to me?
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds absolutely beautiful.
It was amazing, really. Yeah, and the sunrise is a bit more difficult because I've seen so many sunrises. Because even when I'm traveling, I get up early to see the sunrise. That's something I love doing. So I've seen so many, and one beautiful one. Probably one was in there's too many, to be honest. I mean, there's so many.
Just pick one.
Colombia was a beautiful one.
Where in Colombia?
Colombia, but that was a bit difficult because I was at the north coast of Colombia, a bit like in the jungle-ish area, and the sun was coming through the leaves. I have a picture of this too. Because I love sunrise, sunset.
And imagine all the pictures that you have.
Yes. I mean, sunsets are very often very cheesy, very quickly. But they are just, they make me so good. And I always tell my friends the reason why I purposely go to bed early is this way I can get up and be, you know, fresh and see the sunrise. Because yeah. every sunrise I've seen that I purposely got up and walked, even here in Barcelona, sometimes I just get up and go to the beach to just watch the sunrise. It's precious every time, every time.
I know. I like the sunrise more. I think the sunset is beautiful, but it's such a different energy. And I just love when everything is calm and the day is coming to life and everything, like someone comes and, you know, cleans the street and the birds start singing and just people are out running. It's just something for me. I like the sun rise more. Something happens inside of me. Everything wakes up. It's like the spring.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love it when everything's still calm, but you see that everything is, you know, waking up. Everyone is waking up.
Love that. I'm just like you there. I love that. Okay, something else now. My favorite Netflix show for the moment is...
Oh, my God.
My God. Maybe you don't even watch TV.
No, I do watch TV, but show... Oh, I couldn't even answer this at this point. I'm so sorry. Couldn't think of any.
Okay, let's drop it.
Okay.
That's okay. I like you anyway. Okay, nothing can stop me from...
adventuring in my life.
Yay! My dream job when I was growing up was...
It changed very often.
Yeah.
I mean, bush pilot was an idea for a while.
The what pilot?
Bush pilot.
Bush pilot? Okay. I'm not surprised. Okay, that was one. We can do with one job, bush pilot.
Yeah.
Okay. The last one. The biggest lesson I bring with me from this last journey is?
The biggest lesson is that I or one can achieve a lot more than you think you can. And that sometimes we just need to be bold and trust in ourselves.
Mm. Love that. Thank you. So I'm going to share some of my thoughts from today's topic so you can just relax.
Okay.
Riding motorcycles is something that has not been my thing, but I have been a passenger many times, actually. Now that I'm riding this, I recall more rides than I thought when I started doing research for this episode. I have been a passenger many times in Denmark, in Athens, which gave me one of those classical amateur burns on the back of my calf that took for ages to heal. Also on Lefkas, which is a Greek island, and also in Sweden many times, in Mallorca, Spain, and all the way through Geneva Marathon. I was in Geneva as a journalist. I was invited there as a journalist, and I was also going to run the full marathon, but my body at that time was totally burnt out. I had been training really hard for the race, but I ended up just running the 5K race and was instead offered to follow along on the back of the motorcycle, which was beautiful. Geneva in May, out on the countryside, was amazing. And I really enjoyed being so close to nature, which would have been impossible in a car. I really liked it, but I have no intention being a driver, and I have a huge respect for safety riding a bike. But I can really imagine the feeling of freedom. And I can imagine the feeling of simplicity. I am thinking that everything that brings you closer to nature will give you an amazing feeling. And everything that you do that you really love will give you a sense of freedom. So with that said, whoever is listening right now and is even slightly thinking of dreaming about an attempt towards your dream, I say, make a plan and do it. And that will end today's talk. So that was my thoughts about this topic today, which is amazing. I'm so happy we got to meet Sinje.
Wow, that was a very beautiful ending that you just summarized. It's beautiful and really, really nice.
Thank you. Well, because I was thinking, like, I've never been on a motorcycle. And I was like, oh, yeah, it was that time. And then it was that time. And then someone picked me up there and then and there. And then it was that injury in Athens. And well, anyway, so, yeah, I can imagine. I never really ran the Geneva Marathon, but I did the whole the whole tour. Which is amazing. So beautiful. It was in May. You can imagine Geneva countryside in May.
Beautiful.
It was a sunny day, no wind.
Oh, beautiful.
And when you were there as a journalist, it's just so nice. That it's like, here's your lunch, here's your dinner, here's your this and that. And it's like, oh, here's your hotel. And oh, here's a trip. Here's
a okay.
And I had a number. I had one of those numbers that you put on your chest for the run. I had one for the full marathon, and then I had for the 5K one. And that was so struggling mentally. That was struggling mentally because I so much wanted to run the full marathon. So, but I ended up listening to my, well, I wouldn't say brain or heart. I wanted to do it, but I only did the 5K.
Yeah.
So anyway, where can we find you if we want to follow you on your journey? Because this is just the beginning, I'm thinking.
On Instagram.
On Instagram.
Yeah,
okay, so follow Signe on Signe Gottwald, which is GOTTWAALD, Signe Gottwald. Follow me on Shape by Shireen if you want to know what I'm doing when I'm not doing this show. Check out my lovely partner on Insta, which is Beauty Disrupted Global. And thank you to every single one of you listeners. I love that you're here with me today. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast and promise that I will deliver one new show and another amazing guest every Friday. Until we meet next week, have a beautiful day. Kisses and hugs. Thank you, Signe. Bye.
Bye.